Rick@therickSmithshow.com. So, you know, as we've been talking about this week, some of the stuff that Trump's been doing, not really going to be all that great for the economy. In fact, you know, my view of, you know, the executive order or him signing away the rule that would mandate fair pay and safe workplaces, just one of those steps towards moving us backwards and seeing wages decline and all of the horrible things that come out of that. Just absolutely mind-blowing stuff to me. Anyway, some interesting news around debt and household debt, which is why we've asked our good friend Mateus Vernango, professor of economics at Bucknell University, to come talk with us. Also fantastic blogger at nakedkeynesianism.blogspot.com. Mateus, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at this story on, you know, the default rates on student loans, the default rates on auto loans, and going, are we looking at trouble ahead?
Potentially, sure. So the New York Fed had the household debt and credit report a few weeks ago, and it started to make the news, and it looks like, as you said, that both over the last boom, it seems we have substituted to some extent the housing bubble and the mortgage debt. Has basically been substituted by student loans and student debt and auto loans, and it's about the same size. So the decrease since the, you know, crisis in 2008, there's a decrease in $1 trillion in private debt, and that's essentially the decrease in, you know, the mortgage sort of debt, and that has been fully compensated by an increase in student debt and auto debt. And so the fact also that the labor market, as you said, are not that particularly good, including for college kids. So that's also something that was out on in the report, that it seems that lots of the college kids are not getting college, you know, jobs. They're basically disputing the same jobs with everybody else. And so that the demand for college graduates has not increased, and so many people that, you know, decided to further their studies because they couldn't find jobs ended up taking loans and are not necessarily finding those jobs, and now, you know, the delinquency rates are going up. So potentially there is significant danger in a situation like this. It's certainly, I wouldn't say it's a bubble in the same sense that the housing bubble was, or then the dot-com bubble in the 90s. But certainly, this is a dangerous situation.
Yeah, it's troublesome. But here's the thing. I mean, it's not like you can really default on student loans. Don't those follow you forever? I mean, they're almost, I think they're non-dischargeable during bankruptcy, right?
Yeah, sure. No, this is, you know, I think what this says is what we're, you know, thinking into the future. My point was, this is not like we're going to get into a recession because of this. If
right.
we get into a recession, don't get me wrong, we're going to get into a recession because the Fed hikes the rates of interest too much, because Trump decides to cut too much spending on certain things. So there are many ways we can actually end up in a recession. This would make, I think that the consequences of something like this are long-term. It's one more thing that adds to the long-term problems of inequality in the United States. You know, so we're burdening a whole generation with an incredible amount of debt, you know, a pile of debt, and then not necessarily providing for the jobs that will allow them to. So you tell this kid, you know, if you don't get a college education, you're not going to be, you know, able to compete in the labor market, and then in order to actually get that education, you burden them with an incredible amount of debt that they cannot pay. So,
right.
So it's perverse, and it worsens income distribution in the long run. So particularly if wages of college kids are not going up, and if we're not generating those jobs that they actually, are getting an education for.
Well, I mean, it's the basic law of supply and demand. You now have an oversupplied workforce of college-educated people and not enough jobs to feed them. And the wages, I remember the big X. Wages are naturally going to go down because you have so many people vying for so few jobs.
Yeah. And I think that this is, it adds a wrinkle that, the middle class that, it used to be, college is the new high school, so you need to do this, but if you do this, you'll be fine. So it's less clear,
right.
So that's obviously part of what I think is dangerous about this. There are many reasons also, as you said, that go hand in hand with this, in terms of Trump announcements that should make us very concerned about the... I'm a bit surprised of the degree of incompetence and inability to get the economy moving for a guy that supposedly is a populist that was going to bring jobs back and
So
I'm a bit surprised of how little they have moved in that front and how much they have moved in things that at the end of the day have very little impact on the economy.
Yeah, and the scary thing is I don't see anything really happening over the next couple of months because all of this stuff around Russia, in my view, is just going to suck all the oxygen out of the room. I don't think they get an infrastructure bill pushed through. I don't see that happening, even though we desperately need it.
Oh yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. The fiscal policy seems completely married, and is going to be in Congress forever. They are also the incompetence of the legislative sort of policies there. So I think, to some extent, Trump was saved from himself on healthcare, and thanks God, because lots of people, if things are not changed, will not lose their coverage. But the incompetence also means that he's not going to be able to pass much in terms of fiscal policy. So I wouldn't expect anything major, in terms of fiscal policy. But at the same time, we're having sort of a tightening in monetary policy, so that's not good news.
Yeah.
It's not like the economy is doing. There was a point of the populist insurgency. Trump and Bernie. Is that the economy is not that great? It's been it's not terrible. Sure, and we're not Europe, and there are many reasons to be. But it's not doing great, and there are lots of problems, and the economy, people do talk about a secular stagnation and the fact that we're growing less on average than we used to at historical levels. So there are reasons for concern, and as you said, there are several things. If you're thinking of long-term growth, these are areas that we wanted to spend money, infrastructure, but also a solution. What this says to me, this report and this question of that, is that the other thing that we don't talk enough is how to solve this issue of college debt and how to provide the education and many of the jobs. If you actually did, and the reindustrialization, that's the other thing. So if you want to reindustrialize, create the new jobs, the jobs that will be, not those that will be substituted by the robots, but those that will sort of design the robots and create new jobs in industries that we don't have. In order to do those things, we have to create ways in which we make it relatively cheap and not burdensome to get that education.
Right.
And so it's not just the infrastructure. It's the infrastructure. It's providing the skills to the what the GI Bill did back in the 1950s. And that was the backbone of a middle class. So you provided good industrial manufacturing jobs. You also provided access to, one has to remember that the GI Bill also wasn't just education, it was education and mortgages and access to housing. So in all of those things, we're failing miserably, and it doesn't seem that Trump has any plan to change things anytime soon.
And I think it's important to point that out because you think about the middle class of the 50s, and I think this last election, people were pining for that kind of an economy where you had a broad, prosperous middle class. And you're right, the GI Bill was a big part of that because it did give education to folks and help, you know, increase their skills and didn't saddle them with a lifetime of debt, and also got them the opportunity to buy a home, which then, in turn, like my grandparents, they were able to buy the home and build wealth and then retire with some dignity in that home.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, you have to add there, you know, Social Security and then Medicare and Medicaid. So that was the basis of that middle class. So the holes in that, the GI Bill in that sense complemented and finalized with the policies of the 60s, the New Deal policies. But the holes on this are brutal. And the other thing that is positive in all of this, I should say, is that, it's been evident now, the incompetence of the Republican Party to actually manage the economy and govern. So they were the party of no in opposition. And the funny thing is, I don't think Democrats need to be the party of no. They are the party of no by themselves. They're incapable of even passing the legislation that they want to pass. And so that's an amazing realization that they're incapable of. So for some things, that's absolutely good. So they're not going to be able to completely, eliminate Obamacare and many other things. But for some things, for things like, an infrastructure bill, use the things that I suppose at some point in the past were bipartisan. In some cases for the wrong reasons, because it involved pork, and every legislator wanted to bring some of the jobs to their own state and so on and so forth. But it ended up that everybody was for some spending in infrastructure. So we're incapable of doing even that. So that's very dysfunctional.
The Republicans went from the party of no to the party of no idea or no clue. Because look, I really thought that once they got the keys to the steamroller, proposed, passed, signed, and all this bad stuff was going to happen. It's amazing just how incompetent and dysfunctional they've been. That's not good for us. That's not good for the economy. And I look at the Trump budget and you go, oh my gosh, this is going to push us toward that pain and suffering and recession.
Yeah, it's very like, as I said, the biggest danger now, I think it's the inaction on the fiscal front combined with I hope it doesn't happen, and I'm not sure that it will. But remember, Trump will have monetary policy. That they're going to tighten. Trump will have probably three appointments by next year. Three appointments, and that's the other funny thing. Trump has during the campaign he was criticizing the Fed for not having tightened enough. And some of the names they floated seem to be inflation hawks, so people concerned with inflation, which I see no reason. As I said, the labor, we talked about this before. Wages have increased a little bit above the normal trend. After 30 years of stagnation, we're in no position to say that's sort of a problematic thing, or that inflation is going to get out of hand. So there is no reason to think that inflation is around the corner. And yet, if you look at the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times, and the financial press in general, they're all asking for higher rates. So I think that combination is Trump may sort of push the economy in that direction, is very likely to sort of make things significantly worse and possibly throw us into a recession.
Last question I've got for you then, in looking at going back to the student loan debt and it may not be a bubble, but it's troublesome. Is there any way to get out from under this? Because look, I know tons of people who have, they've just graduated from college within the last couple of years and they're 40, 50, 60. I know one couple, $200,000 in student loan debt, and you go, will they ever be able to pay that off? Is there anything that can be done?
So we talked about this before last year during the Bernie campaign. People think it's not realistic to solve this problem. I think if we solve and through millions of billions of dollars, I should say, to save and rescue the financial sector, there is no reason why we shouldn't throw significant amount of money to fix the education problem. So, yes, debt relief is possible. It's been done several times in the past. It's not absurd. And also, we should also change the way we finance public education. Public universities, state public universities, should be considerably cheaper. We shouldn't burden students with these crazy levels. People shouldn't have two mortgages, so to speak.
No, they only have one. They only have one, and that's why they're living in their parents' basement.
Yeah, well, but you see the point. So that ends up being there, and it's worse, as you said, because a mortgage, you can always walk from the house. You cannot walk from your student loans. So that's a even more troublesome kind of debt. So it's perfectly doable. There is no reason that it can't be done. I should say on this, private debt, overall private debt, it's still at $12 trillion, which is more or less where it was. It's slightly below, actually, if you read the report, where it was in 2008. So the private sector has not getting more indebted than before. And in part, that explains also why the recovery has been weak, because we've been on a debt-driven sort of economy, consumption debt-driven economy for the longest, of periods now. And so the problem is that what has increased to some extent is public debt, which is fine. I know we have no trouble with that. But the way we have expanded that debt was for saving, corporations, saving, and in some cases, don't get me wrong, some of this savings, saving the auto industry. That was a good idea. So I'm not necessarily against that. We save banks. We haven't made anybody accountable for all of those losses.
Right.
But we haven't used to. So if we're going to accumulate public debt, which I'm fine. We the interest rates are still low. The government can borrow at low levels. So the private sector is already overburdened. So it should be the state to borrow money and get us growing again. It should be for the things that can promote growth in the long run. So on the top of the agenda, you always say infrastructure, but then also student loans and providing relief for folks that have been, underwater for the last 8 years.
It's a good start, but sadly, I don't see any of that coming out of this White House. Mateus, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, man.
Always great talking with you, Mateus Vernango. Check out the blog, nakedkeynesianism.blogspot.com. We'll get a link at therickSmithShow.com of how you can check it out. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show.